All right, let's start, and Rav K's guys will come later, or not at all. Okay, today we're doing Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, otherwise known as the Satmar Rebbe. We will not do anybody more controversial than the Satmar Rebbe this year. It's not possible to find somebody who's more controversial than the Satmar Rebbe. Almost every single story in the Satmar Rebbe's life is clouded in controversy, both as to the facts and as to the intention. The fundamental chakira, I suppose, is, you know, was he the kind of person who simply was such a kanoi, he was incapable of compromising on anything? Or was he what people sometimes refer to as a baal machlokes? He just couldn't leave any fight, you know, alone. There are two completely different views of the Satmar Rebbe, and somewhere in between is the truth. What's indisputable is the following. He was an incredible Talmud Chacham. Okay, he spoke at his bar mitzvah for a few hours. Okay, imagine being there. And apparently it was good. Okay, he was an enormous Talmud Chacham. He was very charismatic. He had a magnetism to him. He had a sense of humor. You know, people were attracted to him. And he was wildly successful. Because Satmar is the biggest Hasidus in the world, and he created it from scratch. Okay, the idea of building a community in Monroe, these things are like kind of visionary. And he was all that. You know, he created a school system that rivaled the size of any other school system in the United States, just for his Hasidim, for girls also. I don't know what they learned, but he made a girls' school. Okay, let's start at the very beginning. Rav Yoel Teitelbaum was born into Hungarian Hasidic royalty. His father, his name was Hananya Yom Tov Lipa Teitelbaum. He was, I don't know, the Minchas Yom Tov, the something Yom Tov. He was some kind of Yom Tov, okay? And he was the Rav HaRashi, he was the chief rabbi of a town called Sziget, which was a pretty big town in Hungary. Rav Yoel, the Satmar Rebbe, who we're talking about, is the youngest of five children, which is not such a big problem. The problem he had was that he had an older brother. And the older brother is going to inherit the father. Okay? So from an early age, despite all of his gifts, he had no chance of becoming the Sziget Rebbe, of becoming his father's successor, because he was not the oldest brother. Okay? Not really having a life plan, he gets married at 18. By the time he was 18, he already had smicha from a number of gedolim. Okay, again, which attests to the fact that he really, really was a gifted student, and he was a really smart guy. Okay, after the wedding, again, with no real plan, he moves in with his in-laws in some small town in Hungary. He and his wife have three daughters. It's very sad. All three predecease him. One daughter dies as a young girl. One dies in the middle. Anyway, he has no sons and he has no successor because of it, which leads to later problems in Satmar, which we're experiencing now. Not we, but people who care about these things are experiencing it now. Okay, his older brother, Chaim Tzvi, succeeds his father when his father dies shortly after the wedding, and he succeeds his father to all three of his father's positions, Rav of the town, Rosh Yeshiva, and head of the Beis Din. Okay, and Rabbi Yoel is out. So he looks for a job. And he first moves to a town called Satumar. S-A-T-U is one word. M-A-R is the second word. In English, you would call it St. Mary's. That's really what it is. And we call it Satmar. Okay, so he moves to Satmar. And he starts referring to himself as the Satmar Rebbe, or the Rebbe from Satmar. Except he's not. There is a Rav there, and the Rav there doesn't like him at all, and he basically gets kicked out. And this sets like a model for his life, which is he goes someplace, he attracts Hasidim, because he's a huge Talmud Chacham, and he's a very thoughtful person, and again, he has magnetism, he has all these things, and he gets involved in Machlokes, and he gets kicked out. Okay? So that's what happens when he moves to Satmar. He then becomes the Rav of some small community. I don't remember the name of it. But he has big dreams. Okay, so he's in one community, he moves to a larger community. but he wants to get back to Satumar. He wants to get back and be the Rav there. Okay? The Rav who kicked him out passes away. In 1928, the Satmar Rebbe, yeah?
Is there a reason he was kicked out of Satmar?
Yeah, I don't know it. But you'll see in a second that what goes on. Again, in 1928, the Satmar Rebbe passes away. There's an election for the next chief rabbi of Satmar, and Rabbi Yoel participates in the election. It is, by all accounts, one of the dirtiest, ugliest, dishonest elections ever. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that Rabbi Yoel had a big part in that. His chassidim, you know, broke the rules. The other people broke the rules. Basically, he wins the election, but the other side doesn't agree to it. The fighting goes on until 1934. So basically, he waits 6 years in this election battle to become the chief rabbi of Satmar. And again, he always has supporters, and there's always a fight. Okay, just as an aside, while he was trying to get this job or waiting for a job in 1932, he took a trip to Yerushalayim, where he tried to become the successor of Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, who was the Rav HaRashi of the old Yishuv, of the Charedim. That didn't work out either. Okay, so now he's back in Satmar. Now, let's talk about World War II. Okay, if you're in Hungary during World War II, for almost the entire war, you're in the greatest place ever. Because Hungary aligned itself with Hitler and with the Axis. And basically, they left all the Jews alone. But anybody could see what was coming. Right? Okay, you're living in peace and life is great. But anybody could see what's coming. Anybody, that is, except for the Satmar Rebbe. They came to him with all kinds of plans for how to save his Hasidim. He would not listen. He wouldn't talk to people about it. He basically said, you know, better that people die than that they become kofrim. Okay, which he thought would happen if people went to Palestine. You know, he took up that view. He thought it was basically Yaharg Val Yavar to go to Palestine. Yes, it's true. He went to Palestine. Yes, it's true that at the same exact time he sent his daughter and her husband to Palestine. But that's what he said publicly. And it came true, by the way. All of Hungarian Jewry died. Very few people survived. Okay? It's a really big deal. You know, we could spend a long time talking about how he made speeches and how they were edited afterwards so that he wouldn't say the things that he said. Doesn't matter. Okay, the Nazis come. They round up all the Jews. What happens to the Satmar Rebbe? Well, here we get to really, I think, the most fascinating part of his life, which also involves the worst Lashon Hara about the Zionist movement, which has nothing to do with the Satmar Rebbe, but it all comes together. Okay? There's a train, which was named afterwards, you know, for the person who arranged the train, whose name is Kastner. Okay, Kastner was a leading Jew and involved in a lot of different things. It's a fact that he negotiated with Eichmann. Right, there was a plan for blood for Jews. It's the very, very end of the war. It's 1944. You have to understand the situation. It's 1944. The Nazis are now clearly losing the war. Okay? Part of the irrational hatred that Nazis had is while they were losing the war and while they didn't have enough guns and ammunition and trucks and all these things to defend themselves, they were still trying desperately to kill the Jews. So, you know, army people who could have been used at the front were instead in Hungary, you know, rounding Jews up and killing them. What became clear, at least after the fact, was that Nazis needed Jews to do this. This is ugly stuff, but I'll share with you a little bit. If you read the book Perfidy by Ben Hecht, he's a one-sided guy, it's true, but some of the history is there. Essentially, you know, thousands of Jews were guarded by, I don't know, you know, 10 Nazis. It's true, they had guns and they had dogs. But there wasn't anything behind this facade. You know, if they'd overrun the guards, they could have been free. There was no one else. It was the very end of the war. The Nazis were losing the war. So according to one narrative, they got Jews to help them. And they promised the Jews that they would help these people survive the war if they helped them, I don't know if you want to say kill or whatever. Okay? Kastner may or may not have been one of these people. There was a big libel trial in the 50s in Israel where the judge ruled that Kastner literally or figuratively sold his soul to the devil, means he helped the Nazis, and in return, they protected him. Okay? That's one narrative. The other is that, you know, he did what he had to do to survive. He bought his freedom. You know, the Kastner train had space for 1,684 people. It's a big thing. But there's 400,000 Jews. So they're not saving a significant number of people. Okay? The Satmar Rebbe is on that train. Now, this is a huge historical question. The train is for Zionists. The Satmar Rebbe obviously was not a Zionist. Okay? How does he, his wife, and his shamash get spots on the train? Nobody really knows the answer. Even in the trial, nobody really knew the answer. You know, Kastner at the trial said that my father-in-law asked for the Satmar Rebbe to get a spot. You know, there's some legend that the father-in-law who knew the Satmar Rebbe, his mother came to him in a dream and said, you got to get the Rebbe on the train. It doesn't matter. It's a problem. Okay? Okay, the train wasn't such a simple thing. They got on the train. The train stopped many, many times. Eichmann asked for more money. Hasidim almost certainly paid money for the Rebbe who was on the train. They landed up in Bergen-Belsen for a few months. The train landed up in Switzerland. Eventually, he gets to Switzerland. Eventually, he gets to Palestine. Okay? The rest of his life, the Satmar Rebbe lives with the question, essentially, of how did you abandon your Hasidim? Right? How did you take this gift from the Zionists when you said that no one could take gifts from the Zionists? Why didn't you ever thank the Zionists for saving your life? He never did. Okay? These are hard questions. The Hasidim would say it was the very end. He had no choice. He couldn't save anybody. There are arguments on either side. It's 1,000% the case that there are arguments on either side. But those questions haunted the Satmar Rebbe forever. Okay? So now he's in Palestine. The war is over. We win. What happens in Palestine? The short answer is almost nothing. The Rebbe's basically ignored by everybody. Now, this could be, and almost certainly has to do with, the fact that he left his Hasidim behind, the fact that he was a huge anti-Zionist. Hard to know, but he couldn't get a foothold. He tried very, very hard to start a Hasidus in Palestine. It was still Palestine at the time. He tried to raise funds to start a Hasidus in Palestine. It didn't work. He owed a lot of money. As a result, he decided to go to America. Now, he wasn't moving to America, because America was also, like, illegal. You weren't supposed to move to America either. But he thought he could raise funds in America, or at least he could escape his creditors by going there. But in America, he finally succeeds. And this is really, like, an amazing thing, that a person who had failed so often finally succeeds, and succeeds, like, on a huge scale. Okay? He comes to America. What does he see? He sees Hasidim who yearn for the old days. Okay, Hasidim who don't want to become Americans. They want to be Hasidim. And he starts a Hasidus that's more radical than any Hasidus that ever was before. Okay? First of all, the anti-Zionism. How does this work? Well, you have to convince people that anti-Zionism and Frum are the same. Now, they're not. Until the 1930s, basically 100% of Jews wanted to get to Israel, supported the land of Israel, and it was overwhelmingly the case that if they weren't Zionists, again, the Aguda was in favor of saving Jews. They were normal people, right? The Satmar Rebbe opposed the Aguda. They were way too rational for him. So what does he do? So first of all, and we'll come back to this in a second, he, as an ideology, he makes it acceptable for Frum Jews to be against the state of Israel. Completely acceptable. He makes it acceptable to rally against them, to make protests, to call them Nazis. Maybe he never did it himself, as Hasidim certainly did. He makes all of this okay. And it wasn't okay before. But he convinces people that it was. Right, he starts a Hasidus that claims to be what Hasidus was in the 1930s in Hungary. It really wasn't. And his Hasidus, you know, if being a Hasid means living in a bubble, being a Satmar Hasid means living in a bubble inside of a bubble. Right? You're completely set apart you're completely unconnected to anybody else. Okay, so what does it mean to be a Satmar Chassid? Complete separation of the sexes, complete anti-Zionism. You know, your wife has to shave her head, even though she covers it with either a wig or a hat. Here's a huge thing. However, he is in favor of going to work. The Satmar Rebbe recognized the power of money. And whereas in most other Chassidus, at the beginning, you get married, you work, you go to Kollel for a few years, you have some kids. That's bad because you need to support a family then and you're behind the eight ball. The Satmar Rebbe said, no, you can go to work immediately after you get married. Get married young and go to work. He had an interesting theory of money. Okay, it's a Kabbalistic idea. Money actually and theoretically has two sides to it. At least the coin has two sides to it, right? One of it is seductive and materialistic, right? That's the bad side of money. But the other represents a godly shining light. The source of the money is pure, if it's used for purity, then let's be rich if we can. And Satmar Chassidim became incredibly wealthy. B&H Photo, by the way, is like a Satmar store, right? Everybody works there. They have a lot of businesses, and they're really good at it. And they do it lechatchila. It's not like, okay, we're really supposed to sit in kollel all day, but we need some money. Everybody in Satmar believes in the idea of working. So the Rebbe sort of walked the line between being completely separatist and allowing his chassidim to do business and to work. And the Rebbe himself got involved. I don't know the details of business plans, but the Rebbe was very involved in giving business advice and, you know, certainly in founding Monroe in upstate New York and being involved in purchasing things. You know, the Rebbe understood, just to get ahead of myself, the power of the block vote, right? If you come to Satmar, it's not like the Rebbe tells you, I'll give advice to my Hasidim and hopefully they'll vote for you. He tells his Hasidim who to vote for and they vote. You know, where else can you go in the world in a New York, you know, election? Where can you go in New York and somebody tells you, if you give me X, I will give you 40,000 votes, right? And it's not a dream. He's going to give you, you know, in Monroe, when you run for president and the Satmar Rebbe endorses you, you don't get most of the votes. You get all of the votes, right? That's political power, and the Satmar Rebbe used that. I'm not saying it's illegal. That's how American works. It's funny that the Satmar Rebbe would have nothing to do with anything in Israel. In America, you know, gamed the political system for his own benefit, and he was successful at it, and you understand why. If you deliver the votes, you know, people do what you want. Okay, let's go back to the anti-Zionism stuff for a second. When the state is formed, Satmar Chassidus started slightly in America. It started small in Williamsburg, slightly before the state was formed. Okay, when the state is formed in 1948, almost all Jews celebrate it. It doesn't matter if you're a Zionist or if you're not a Zionist. Almost all Jews celebrate the founding of the state, except for the Satmar Rebbe. Okay, he single-handedly turns an obscure Agadata at the end of Ksubos into the most important Gemara ever. What's the Agadata? The Agadata is the Agadata of the Gimel Shvuos. We'll take a second to do this. Maybe later in the year we'll do it for real. The Pasuk, first of all, the idea makes sense. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, Bavela yuva'u v'shama yihiyu ad yom pakti otam ne'um Hashem. God says, I'm sending you into Galus. When does the Galus end? When God says, the Galus ends. That's what the Pasuk says. Okay, the Gemara says it's talking about the Kla Mikdash, not actually real people. But that's the introduction to the following. Hishpati etchem benot Yushalayim bitzvaot o ba'ilot hasadeh. What? Im ta'iru v'im ta'oru et ha'ava ad shetechpatz. That's the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And that's the source. It says three times Hishpati etchem. That's the source for the following. What? Shir Shirim. Okay. Rav Chanina says, Damar, Gimel Shvuos Halalu Lama. What are these three Shvuos that we're talking about? Achat, Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael Bachoma, or Kachoma. It means no mass immigration. Okay? The second, Shehishpia Kadosh Baruch Hu at Yisrael Shalom Yimredu Beumot Haolam. The second is we can't rebel against the Goyim. Va'achat Shehishpia Hakadosh Baruch Hu at Ovdei Kochavim Shalom Yishtabdu Bahem BeYisrael Yoter Midai. Okay, the Goyim took a shvuah not to oppress us too much. Those are the three shvuahs. And again, for the Satmar Rebbe, like a shvuah is bigger than a halacha. So again, the answers are simple. They really are. You know, we got permission. The Holocaust seems like they were mishtabed us, yoter midai, they violated their shvuah. But to me, it's just me, I think the following. Not the Rif, not the Tur, not the Rambam, not the Mechaber, not the Ramah. Nobody ever quoted this halacha, even remotely related to halacha. It doesn't exist anyplace. The Satmar Rebbe made up a religion around the Gemara that had not been focused on, and there's no poskim who quoted seriously la halacha. Okay? He wrote a book called Vayal Moshe. Yes, I own a copy. Okay? The book has three parts to it. One is Ma'amar Shalosh Shivuot, which is all about this Gemara, about the Shalosh Shivuot, and how it's the worst thing ever that we're doing by violating the Shalosh Shivuot. One second. I'll add this also. Well, I'll leave for a second. Second, Ma'amar Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's apparently not a mitzvah to make aliyah, which, by the way, doesn't bother me at all. What bothers me is it's not an issue of a mitzvah or not. Right, he knows the Ramban says it's a mitzvah, and he points out why it's not true, and the Ram doesn't count it, and that's all the case. But as Rav Kook once said, like, didn't you ever read Chumash? Right, like, you could say it's not a mitzvah, but it's not a value. Okay, that's third, and the third is Ma'amar Lashon HaKodesh, where he makes clear that it's also to speak Hebrew. Okay, that's the safer. Yes. I don't know. I didn't ask him. No, not as far as I know. He has real sources. You could borrow the Sefer. He has real sources. He's a huge Talmud Chacham. It just, to me, that's the bottom line. But it's just me. I don't have a machlok with the Satmar Rebbe. I don't count. Yes?
So he was saying you can't make Aliyah? Or like, it doesn't matter if you make Aliyah? What was his point?
No, you can't make Aliyah. It's also to live in Israel. Quick, yeah.
How does the Satmar community in Israel?
Yes, a good question. If we have a second, we'll come back to that. Okay. That's the Sefer. Now, it's rare for a Rebbe to write a Sefer, but it's clear that he wanted to make his position, you know, more accessible to everybody. The general response to the publishing of the Sefer Vayal Moshe was it was ignored. People just didn't respond to it, and people left it alone. He then wrote another Sefer after the Six-Day War. Like, you'd think after the Six-Day War he would rethink his position. But no. The Six-Day War was won by the Satan. In the Sefer Ala Gulav Al-Tmura, for the first time ever, he writes this terrifying thing. He says that because of the state of Israel, because of Zionism, 6 million people died. Okay? He says it. That, you know, it's as offensive, and maybe, again, whether he believes it or not, it's hard to know. It's hard to understand the basic premise of, wait, the state of Israel is against God's wishes, but the Holocaust was what God wanted? Like, exactly how does that work? Okay, but it is what it is. Nevertheless, he continues to become more popular. His extreme positions attract the Eidah HaCharedis in Israel. The Eidah HaCharedis in Israel is like a tiny thing at this point. He becomes their honorary president. He eventually becomes the Ra'avad, the Rosh of the Bezdin, of the Eidah HaCharedis, even though he lives in America. There's one moment where he really becomes a bigger deal than he had been before. It's 1955. It's the first elections in the state of Israel. Okay? The Aguda wants to get the vote out, wants people to vote for the Aguda. They believed, even if they're not Zionists, you know, they believed in something, and they wanted to get influence. Okay? The Belzer Rebbe is in favor of it. He goes around telling people they should vote. They bring in Rav Aaron Cutler. We'll do him maybe next week, right? The founder of Lakewood. He's the leader of certainly Haredi orthodoxy in America. He comes and he speaks to people trying to get the vote out. Then the Satmar Rebbe shows up on his own to oppose them and to argue against it, and it's Yehard Val Yavar to vote. He doesn't convince anybody. Everybody votes. But he becomes the leader of the faction that is against the state of Israel. It becomes a machlok between Rav Aaron Cutler, who was the leader of Klal Yisrael, and the Satmar Rebbe, who wasn't. But in the press, and the way it's seen from the outside, the Satmar Rebbe is the equivalent of Rav Aaron Cutler. And that was huge for his Hasidim, and that was huge for his movement. He did the same thing with Rav Moshe Feinstein. When he took on Rav Moshe Feinstein, all of a sudden it became a machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Posek Ador, and the Satmar Rebbe, who was not the Posek Ador. But if he took him on, you know, it increased his visibility, it increased his, you know, his reputation, and it worked for him. Okay. Again, as I mentioned before, he worked very successfully with American politicians to take advantage of all kinds of loopholes, take advantage of things that are legal to take advantage of. Housing for the poor, special ed. Special ed was huge for Satmar. They made their own, what's it called? Their own, like, educational district or something. You know, there are fewer, as an observation, there are fewer and fewer special ed children than there used to be. There are fewer and fewer Down syndrome children than there used to be. It could be because of early testing. It could be people have abortions. But in Satmar, there's a bunch of them. And they get government funding, and they create their own school system, and it works for them. You know, to build a community outside of New York was unheard of at the time. And he built Monroe, however you say it in Satmar, he built it. And it's a huge success, and thousands of his Hasidim live there. So, you know, on that level, he was successful. At his, yeah.
What were the loopholes that he did?
I'm not saying loopholes is a loaded term. I don't mean loopholes. You can get funding for special ed, right? You can get massive funding for special ed. What you do with it is up to you. It's kind of the honor system, okay? Yeah.
Where's Monroe? Monroe
is, huh? It's upstate New York. Exactly where, I don't know.
It's like New York.
It's in New York, just not New York City. It's not that far away, but it's its own world. Okay, when the Satmar Rebbe died in 1979, 100,000 people went to his funeral. That's, like, at the time, the biggest funeral ever, right? It's unheard of. He was successful that way. His Hasidim, you know, swear by him. They all speak Yiddish. No one speaks English there. They all know English, obviously, but no one speaks Yiddish there. Okay, so if you look at it that way, he clearly won. If you look at it another way, it's less clear. I have a friend. He's actually my friend. He's in his 90s now, his late 90s. He grew up in Satmar. When he came to America, he was the Satmar Rebbe's houseboy. Like, he lived with the Satmar Rebbe. Then he moved to Efrat, and he's a Zionist. And so I asked him once, like, what happened? And he said to me, there's too much hate. You can't hate everybody. And he said, in Satmar, that's kind of how it goes. So he left. But a different story. We'll end with this. When the three boys were kidnapped and eventually found having been killed, so the two current Satmar Rebbe, just to be clear, Rabbi Yoel didn't have any sons. So his nephew, Rav Moshe Teitelbaum, took over. He had two sons. One is called Aaron, one is called Zalman. Okay, but the way it's told in Satmar, there's the Aaronis and the Zalmans. Okay, somebody tells Zali, there's a whole Hasidus named after him. Okay? They hate each other. So one is the Satmar Rebbe, you know, in Williamsburg, and one is the Satmar Rebbe in Monroe. Okay? That's why Satmar is, it's not even falling, even like you'd think that would help it fall apart. It's not. It continues to grow. It's unbelievable. My father, Zichron Levracha, told me that every week in Williamsburg, there's a new class that's born. Every week, 25 babies are born. It's unbelievable how big it is and how successful it is. Against all explanations. But anyway, so when this happened, and it was like everybody followed the news. You know, the three boys was a huge, huge thing, and they were found dead. You know, people tried to say the right things. Everybody except the Satmar Rebbes, who competed with each other to say the most provocative thing. So what one of the Satmar Rebbes said was, it's the parents' fault. Why is it the parents' fault? Because they sent their sons to a yeshiva in the occupied territories. So God is punishing them. I thought to myself, the Satmar Rebbe would be rolling over in his grave now. Meaning, despite everything else, the state of Israel is the state of Israel. You know? Okay, the West Bank, the occupied territories, but they've given up on the state of Israel. After the Six-Day War, the Satmar Rebbe told his Hasidim, not to go to any of the places that had been liberated. Okay, nobody listens to it. Sadme Hasidim go to the Kotel, they go to Kever Rachel, they go to Mar Samach Pela, all places that the Rebbe said they shouldn't go. So yes, Big Gadol, you know, he's winning because Satmar Chassidus is incredibly successful. By the way, the Bikur Cholm of Satmar is like the envy of anybody who's ever done Bikur Cholm. These people are given over to Bikur Cholm. You know, they build apartments, they build places near hospitals. On Erev Pesach, it's a pretty busy day. You know, Satmar ladies show up in a bus to the hospital with matzos, with wine. I don't mean, God forbid, at all to pretend that like that bad stuff is going on. The ideology is something we have to work out. But the Rebbe was a Talmud Chacham. The Rebbe was all the things as Hasidim say he was. Satmar does wonderful, lovely things. The ideology is problematic for us. You know, certain things in the Rebbe's life are problematic to us. And in the end, you know, Tzarech Iyun Gadol. Have a great day. Today in the afternoon, we're having a Yom Iyun today at 5 or 5:15 on a topic called self-esteem and self-confidence. Admit it, you need it. After Mincha, we'll do Halacha. Okay, Shkach.